Welcome back, everybody, to Hoops HD. This is our continuing 2020-2021 preseason podcasts. Up now, we're recording this on Thursday, November 19th, is the SEC. This is a conference that surprisingly only had two teams in the preseason top 25, but what we're going to do is we're going to take a look at all 14 or 25 or 87 members of this conference, however many it is.
Some more closely than others.
We are going to tell you what we think each of these teams is going to do, how many teams are going to make the tournament, based on what they look like on paper. Obviously, who knows what's going to happen with the number of games that are going to get played as the season goes forward, but we're going to assume for the purpose of this podcast, at least, that everyone's going to get close to a full conference season and some type of non-conference season in. But on that note, I do want to start with the two teams that were rated in the top 25. And actually, Rocco, let me start with you. Number 10 in the nation preseason was John Calipari's one-and-done Kentucky Wildcats.
Yeah, I mean, Kentucky, here we go again, right? You see almost the entire team leave, including guys like Johnny Juzang, who just transferred to UCLA, and saw a number of, I think, three Wildcats at least drafted last night.
Tyrese Maxey back to the Sixers. Yeah, go ahead.
There you go. But here we go again with a fresh crop. So led by B.J. Boston, who's a first-team all-SEC pick. I think he's depending on what your resource is, the fifth on my list, he's the fifth best freshman coming in or in the entire class, whether they're going to college or not. And just an elite player, McDonald's player, all the accolades you can want and can score at will. 6'6" guy, so he can play multiple positions. He's got length on the wing to defend. I think that's a natural piece for Calipari. Terrence Clark's also a top 10 player coming in. 6'7" as well, very lengthy player. Oliver Saar gets his, you know, all the drama in Lexington was about him this summer. Finally gets the waiver approved, ready to come in and bring some of that experience, but also a newcomer. So it's not like he's been around for a while and he's annoyed by all these freshmen and he's thrown into the mix as a new guy in the system. Really only Keon Brooks and is the only one that was around last year. Davion Mintz was there for practices, but now he's eligible. He had the sit out year last year, and they also got Obi Toppin's brother, Jacob Toppin, got his waiver approved. So you add in another three or four freshmen that are all studs that I didn't even mention. I think this team is going to be right there as they always are.
Yeah, Tytel Saar, for example, probably the best post player in the ACC last year. Here he comes over to Kentucky. But I think we have the same question we've asked with some of these other teams that are so young with no preseason, with limited non-conference. Will Kentucky be ready for SEC play?
They're going to be tested early. I believe their first five games in December, Kansas, Georgia Tech, Notre Dame, UCLA, and Louisville. Obviously not exactly five top 25 teams there, but five big-time conference opponents, Power 5 conference teams. So they're going to be tested very early. And I think that Saar could make the difference because he is an experienced leader. I got to see him play out in Anaheim against Penn and Arizona last fall. God, it seems like a year ago. It was a year ago. He's great. He's 7 foot. He's legit. And it's one thing when Calipari brings in a guy like Nate Sestina, who's a tall guy from Bucknell. I think it's quite another to bring in a 7-footer from a Power 5 conference like Saar. I think Rocco's very good to point out that he could be a difference maker.
Yeah, Tytel, like mentioned, they're out of conference schedule. And again, it's what Kentucky does. They replace NBA players or NBA caliber players with NBA caliber players. It is not unusual, if you think back to years past, that Kentucky struggles early. Last year, you know, even when they're winning games, they're having to sweat them out. A couple of years ago, they got blown out by Duke, and everybody freaked out. Last year, they had the home loss to Evansville, one of the most bizarre results in a game I've ever seen, considering how far apart they two were at the end of the year.
Evansville failed to win a game in the Missouri Valley Conference last year.
Right. So Kentucky always sort of comes together right, you know, at the midway point, and they're a team that's much better at the end of the year than they are at the beginning. Does that get exacerbated this year because of what we keep saying, the lack of practice time, the lack of preseason games? They're going to have a test right out of the gate against a Richmond team in this tournament that they're hosting. Richmond finished the season strong last year. I think a lot of us were, you know, looking at them as a possible tournament team, all five starters back. This is a team that's already gelled, and it's the the most dangerous type of team that a young team that isn't used to playing together could face at this point of the year. So in addition to the teams that Tytel mentioned, they're going to be tested even earlier than that, perhaps.
Yeah, that might be Richmond's most important game of the year, because considering that it is winnable for those reasons, and yeah, it's a team that's not going to have a lot of chances because of the shortened schedule.
Right. So moving into the A-10 preview.
let's switch back to the SEC. Sleek, let me bring you in here. The other team that was ranked in the top 25 was the Tennessee Volunteers. What are your thoughts about Rick Barnes' team this year? They were number 12 in the preseason.
It's been a couple of years since we've seen the core of guys like Jordan Bone, Admiral Schofield, and Grant Williams move on. But the Vols, they did get off to a bit of a slow start last year where they – lose at Cincinnati. They get boat race at home against Wisconsin and LSU, but they actually finished 9-9 in the SEC. They did win at Kentucky, which is normally not easy to do, but given how 2020 went, maybe it was their time to finally get a win there. But now that Rick Barnes is starting to get settled into Tennessee, we're starting to see more reloading with this program instead of a complete rebuild.
Yeah, well, Tytel, let me ask you about this team here. Several big freshmen coming in, including guys like Keon Johnson, Jaden Springer. A lot of talent coming to this Tennessee team, isn't there?
They do. A great recruiting job by Rick Barnes. Usually, I don't think of him as getting a lot of McDonald's All-Americans, but certainly I think one of his best classes ever for a guy who's going into his sixth year in Tennessee. I actually want to focus on one of the older guys, transfer from Sacred Heart, grad transfer EJ Anosiki. He's not even the second best player in his own family. His brother OD led the nation in rebounding twice at Siena, and his sister Nikki went to Knoxville for college, won not one, but two titles as a player for the women's team in Tennessee.
Well, hey, EJ led the Northeast Conference in rebounding last year. That's got to count for something. Come on.
We love the Northeast Conference.
We do.
The Northeast Conference. Anyway, moving on to the Northeast Conference.
Rocco, do you think this team is number 12 in the nation? You think that's a good preseason ranking for them?
I think 12 is, yeah, fair. And I think the order that we're going through the teams is good too. I think I've seen people have Tennessee above Kentucky. I do think that Tennessee belongs in this place, in this two spot. You know, they have a lot of ground to make up from last year. But I am very impressed with Pons. You know, he's a guy that pulled out of the draft late. He could have stayed in the draft. And you got Fulkerson. If you look at a lot of the efficiency rankings, he's one of the most efficient players you'll find coming back anywhere in the country. So just makes a lot of great decisions. He scores, he rebounds. Guys like that can only help your team get better. And they learned a lot of tough lessons last year, and I think they really started hitting their peak towards the end. So if they can just carry that momentum forward, good things are in store.
Well, David, the team that came in number 26 in the preseason ranking, just missed the top 25, is a team that, if we put aside all the off-court issues going on, I am pretty high on this LSU team this year. There's a lot of talent here and a couple big waivers that have come through with guys like Josh LeBlanc and Sharif O'Neal already. I think they're still waiting on one from Brian Penn Johnson from Rocco's team there. But
he's good.
Whether or not he got his waiver or not, but what about this LSU team?
The backcourt is really strong. They do have some key pieces. And again, they have that sort of off the court issues lingering over the program, but it seems like they've had that for the last couple years and it hasn't really bothered them. So yeah, I think they're going to be a force. There's one or two teams that we haven't talked about yet that I actually like more than them. I still like them, but probably not as much as the rest of the panel.
Well, maybe I can sell Tytel on them. What about this LSU team? Smart and Thomas in the backcourt, Watford and Days down low. I just think that there's it's a full team.
A lot of and young too. After losing a guy like Skylar Mays. I think that they might be a year away from being a real contender, but it was great to see Watford come back. I thought he was gone for good. It's also very hard to cheer for Will Wade. Like, I've just heard so many things about recruiting and this stuff. Like, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, but it's hard to cheer for him.
I agree with you there. Like I said, I'm putting the off-court stuff aside, but I just, on paper, I think that there's enough talent here to potentially be up there contending with Kentucky and Tennessee for the top of this conference. Salika. They're also, I think, just a couple of spots below LSU, again, outside the top 25. How about the Florida Gators?
The Florida Gators also had a couple of young guys that are going to have 4 years of experience total between them, and Noah Locke and Keontae Johnson. Both were juniors, and they're also going to help fill a little bit of a hole that Kerry Blackshear had after leaving for his 1 year following his grad transfer from Virginia Tech. The Gators were kind of up and down last year. They did beat Xavier to win the Charleston Classic back in November, but they kind of floundered for about a month and a half before they started to pick things up in the SEC. But I still think Florida is going to be a decent team that should be in the top half of this conference.
Yeah, David, a couple of interesting transfers coming over. Appleby from Cleveland State, where he scored 14 points a game. DeRuji from Louisiana Tech, which was a double-digit scorer. Add into the guys that he mentioned coming back.
Yeah, this is one of the teams that when I mentioned that I liked a couple more than LSU, well, this was one of them. I know that they were kind of surprisingly disappointing last year. I mean, they were still good. They were still a tournament team, but I think we were thinking top 10 Final Four caliber at the beginning of the year, and they clearly weren't that. But I think that with the experience, that is actually maybe not top 10, but I think they're going to hit their stride this year more so than they did last year. I'm big on this Florida team. I like them a lot.
Well, beyond these four teams we mentioned, Rocco, let me ask you this. Who would be your next team up here in the Big 12? And please don't say Vanderbilt. I'm talking SEC, not Big 12.
Yeah, no problem. actually a team that I have slotted third, maybe surprisingly, is the Alabama Crimson Tide.
Nice pick.
Yes, good pick.
Yeah, and you know, it's a little tough right now to differentiate them from Florida and LSU, but I think with Alabama, you've got a proven coach in Nate Oates, a guy I've been high on during his Buffalo years, and he's now got really just a tremendous roster to work with. You know, Petty and Shackelford are guys that are potential all conference, probably definitely all conference for Petty, and then you've, you know, you add in a really solid bench with guys like Reese and Rojas. He did a great job on the recruiting trail as well. So I think what Alabama's bringing to the table is a really nice mix of different styles of players. You know, Oates at Buffalo did such a great job of having these interchangeable parts, guys between 6'3 and 6'8 that can all shoot from the outside, basically, you know, positionless basketball. You add in Jordan Bruner down low to add some scoring from Yale and more so rebounding. He averaged 9 boards a game at Yale. I think it's a really nice.
That led the Ivy League, actually.
Yeah, RIP to the Ivy League this year.
But, there is one guy that Rocco did not mention. And that's
moving on to the Ivy League. This year.
All right, Rocco, let me finish up. I'll go to Sleek on it.
Yeah, and I think the other guy, you know, Quinterly, we've been hearing about him for 2 years, and he had that rough experience at Villanova. He's now at a year away from basketball, out of the limelight, and he can just now focus on basketball down there in Tuscaloosa with all these talented players around him. I do think this is a deep team. I think it's a team full of really good shooters, and it's going to create a lot of challenges for defenses. I think they can win quite a few games.
Yeah, I mean, I would note that one other freshman, big Alex Chikoo. I don't know if I said his name right or not, but he is out for the season with an injury. Yeah. But I still think they've got enough. That would have just been a piece of depth. But Sleek, you had a comment on the Crimson Tide?
Nothing further to add to what Rocco had mentioned.
Tytel, you want to get
this? This was the other team I liked more than Owens.
That's why I asked Tytel if he wants to get in, because you do have an Ivy League transfer on this team, and I know he likes to comment on them.
I mean, if it was just one or two, but it seems like every podcast we do, we got Mike Smith at Michigan, we got Ryan Bentley at Cal, and now we got Jordan Bruner at Alabama. He's arguably not even the best player in his family. As his sister Ashley, the pro basketball in Portugal. He had some major injuries in the past at torn meniscus. But, I'm glad that at least some Ivy League players are getting to play this year, because most of them are not.
Yeah.
Sleek, why don't I ask you about a team with a Northern Kentucky transfer and an Indiana transfer? How about the Arkansas Razorbacks bringing in Jalen Tate from NKU, Justin Smith from Indiana, a couple guys that came on strong like Desi Sills. You got a UConn/New Mexico transfer in Vance Jackson. How about Eric Musselman's team here?
I think you're going to have to throw darts at a wall to see what kind of a result we're going to get from Arkansas last year, because it's going to be a little bit different chemistry-wise compared to what they had, because I think Brendan Joe was one other key contributor who's not going to be there this
Isaiah.
Year. Isaiah Joe.
Yeah, Isaiah Joe is gone, yeah, but go ahead.
Nope, I have nothing more on Arkansas because
David, were they another team that you liked better than LSU?
No. I mean, Arkansas, I think Musselman is a really good coach. We've certainly seen his ability to build programs. I think he will get there with Arkansas. I don't think this is the year. Especially it looks like they're almost having a whole big overhaul of the roster, but I'm not really looking at them as being a team that we're going to see inside the bubble.
I kind of am, but again, it's if they can gel together, and I don't know if they can because of the shortened season and all that, but I think that there is some pretty good players on this team, and I am looking at this Arkansas team a little bit. Rocco, are you looking at Frank Martin's team down there in South Carolina at all?
I am. I'm glad you
Me
asked.
Me too.
it's a team that, you know, once again, tough to figure out what to do with. Great news for Frank. A.J. Lawson withdrew from the draft. He's back. You got guys like Bryant and Manaya who are just really steady, good team players. They do a lot of things on the court, get rebounds, and contribute in a lot of ways. A mystery for me is Seventh Woods, who we haven't seen in a couple years, came over from North Carolina, but Frank's been speaking very highly of him and what he's going to bring to the table at the point guard position. He was highly recruited out of high school, now very much older, and this is a veteran team. So you look around the SEC, even the teams we've talked about, there's some dependency there on youth and transfers. South Carolina is kind of the opposite. They've got the steady veteran group, and they've got a team that might not take as long to gel. They once again last year a rough non-conference season with injuries, and then look what happened in SEC play. They finished in the top half. They go over 500 now this year, looking to pick up where they left off. God forbid they get injuries again, but I mean, I think that really cost them a bid last year.
I agree with Rocco. Like, this was a team that was a lot better in the second half of the year than they were in the first half of the year because of the injuries. And if they can stay healthy this year, I like them more than Chad's Arkansas team.
Tytel, Bruce Pearl's Auburn team went 25-6 last year. Another great season, and they bring everybody not quite back.
They bring in Sharif Cooper, who might be one of the best freshman point guards in the country, not just the conference. But, yeah, the cupboard is a little bare for Coach Pearl, so I don't think we're going to see him making the Final Four this year.
Is there enough here that they could be on the bubble, though, even? Let's put it that way. You go for 25 wins last year, but with, I think, all five starters gone, right?
I will put them outside the bubble, but if somebody thinks they're inside, have at it.
Stalika, you want to make a case for Auburn?
Not this year.
Kieran Crickets. Let's move on then. Rocco, Kermit Davis, unfortunately, one of the coaches that was diagnosed with COVID. What about his Ole Miss team this year? Can they make a run at the bubble?
Well, you know, this time of year, I'm always high on a Kermit Davis team. I mean, he's a proven coach. I've always been high on him. Last year was up and down for the Rebels. They really, didn't get as much out of guys like Tyree and Hinson as I thought they would. But now Romello White comes in, a guy us in the Pac-12 are very familiar with, really steady force. I think that's going to help them tremendously, especially in the SEC. Question mark for me is Demencio Vaughn. You know, he was one of the best players in the MAAC at Ryder. Can he make the leap up to Ole Miss? Same thing with Jarkel Joyner coming from Bakersfield. We know what Kadeem C can do now. Came out of junior college last year and gave him 9 and 5.5. Shuler's an all-SEC type of guy. And you got Davis. So, yeah, I mean, there's just a muck here in the SEC between, like, 5 and 12. And at that point, the way I start, I think the only fair way to look at it is you start tie-breaking through who's the stronger coaches. So I put Ole Miss towards closer to 5 than 12 because of Kermit.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Another transfer to keep an eye on there, Robert Allen, was 14 points a game for Samford last year. But again, you've taken guys big step when you bring them from the Big West and the Metro Atlantic and the Southern up to the SEC. David, how about Quanzo Martin's Missouri Tigers?
How about
everybody's back from last year?
Yeah, you keep waiting for Missouri to be good, or I do. And like, while he did go to one tournament, it's been forever. Like, really, like, since they've joined the SEC, they've been pretty much irrelevant, at least on the national spectrum of things. They should be improved this year with all that talent back, but I'm not expecting them to be a tournament team.
I tell you, agree with that?
I agree with that. I love that they keep recruiting guys named Smith. Their backcourt of Smith and Mark Smith is going to be great. They could use J.R. Smith and Josh Smith and a few more guys if they really want to succeed, though.
All right. Salika, how about our good buddy Uncle Buzz at Texas A&M?
Well, it's still going to be a couple of years before we really get some quote-unquote buzz down in Texas A&M.
Yeah, Rocco, I agree with Sleek. I don't think that this is even a bubble team this year, but I think the future is looking really good for A&M. Would you agree with that?
I would, yeah, absolutely. And I thought the way that they, you know, finished 5-2 last year and pulled off some big upsets, they basically, to me, were the bubble burster of the SEC. You had, if you remember, at the end of last year, we had 4 or 5 teams trying to get inside the bubble, and A&M kept knocking them all off. I think that's a great sign for this year. You got guys like Flagg, Miller, Jackson, Gordon, all back. You got Kevin Marfo, another transfer from the MAC or MAAC, if we're allowed to call it that, coming in at center from Quinnipiac, a guy who averaged 13 rebounds a game in that league, and some really talented freshmen. I actually think I'm higher on A&M than maybe some of you. I've got them getting 9th this year in the league, and to me that means they should at least be on the board. I'm not going to put them inside the bubble yet, but I think they should be at least considered preseason.
They went 10-6 in the SEC last year too. You got to remember. I mean, that was a
This is a team that they just play like all Buzz Williams teams. I mean, with tons and tons of guts. It's just that the talent isn't quite there yet. But as far as Texas A&M will be a regular top 25 team pretty soon, just not this year.
Tytel, Mississippi State won 20 games last year and had Robert Woodard and Nick Weatherspoon decide to come back this season, we'd have a very interesting discussion, I think, about this team. Without them,
that would be NBA draft pick Robert Woodard the second. So yep. I think he might have made the right decision. I wish he would have gone a little higher than he did. I think the cupboard is a little bare for Coach Howland. He's in his 6th year now at Mississippi State. Got a nice front court piece in Abdul Addo, but I think it's going to be the outside the bubble for the Bulldogs.
Salika, how about Vanderbilt? Jerry Stackhouse in his 2nd year with Scottie Pippen's son playing for him. Come on. A little love here?
It's been about 5 or 6 years since Vanderbilt was relevant, but ever since Kevin Stallings left a scorched earth in Nashville, I just don't see hope on the horizon quite yet for this team.
I will say that their defense, DJ Harvey coming from Notre Dame should be a decent scorer. Cleavon Brown was out last year. He could be a double-double type of guy. But the team lost 21 games last year and the top 2 scorers from that team. So
I still think nothing against Coach Stackhouse. I still think getting rid of Bryce Drew was a mistake. Oh, well.
Yep. And David, one team we haven't discussed yet.
Well, Georgia.
What about Tom Crean and the Georgia Bulldogs?
Well, getting rid of Bryce Drew was a mistake. I think hiring Tom Crean also a mistake. Probably not going to be very good this year. It probably will be his last year. That program has a ceiling that's much, much higher than what they've been playing at the last couple of years. I don't know. Bryce Drew is available. Maybe they'll hire him.
Well, let's see. They went 500 last year with the number 1 draft pick from the NBA draft on the team. And Rocco, this year they're relying on a Stony Brook transfer and a George Mason transfer, assuming he could play because he had an arrest for driving arrest last month.
I mean,
this is rough, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little cutthroat to say year three is it for him, for Coach Crean. But yeah, he's got a track record, and Indiana fell apart at the end. So perhaps that's enough to get the boosters involved. But I think, you know, this team, yeah, it's a team that was 136th in defense last year. I don't even see the defense even getting better than that this year. But offensively, you're going to see an uptick in shooting. You know, Edwards, number one pick, supremely talented. But these guys were the worst three-point shooting team in the SEC, if I remember right. P.J. Horn was brought in also from Virginia Tech to help with shooting, as well as Kyrt. But I just don't think, you know, guys like Katie Johnson, a really big recruit, are ready to, you know, take this team to the top half of the league this year. And, you know, Crean really needs to have a good year. So it's a tough situation.
From what I see on paper, I think 13th place would be a good year. But
well, yeah, and you got to keep in mind, I know it only is his third year. I'm trying to look at their out-of-conference schedule here, Gardner-Webb. Okay, he'll win maybe not Montana, but this could be a year where they do not win 10 games. They might not win 7. You know, it's partly the shortened season. When you just look at the rest of the SEC, who are they going to beat other than Vanderbilt?
Maybe not Vanderbilt. But on that note, though, I want to run through each of you with the same question we've asked each of these podcasts. Number one, who's going to win this conference? Number two, how many bids? And number three, any other final thoughts about the SEC? And Mr. Tytel, let me start with you this time.
As much as Kentucky is usually the favorites, and deservedly so with all of the recruiting talent, I'm going to go with Tennessee this year. I think that the combination of the seniors like Fulkerson and Pons and Anasiki, along with the hotshot freshman, will give Rick Barnes a nice little mix there. As far as how many get in, I will set the over-under at 6.5, and I'll take the under. As far as the fun fact, it's more of a fun question. Who wins more games in December, Tom Crean or his brother-in-law, Jim Harbaugh?
That's a good one. Stalika.
I'm actually going to say only 5 teams are probably going to be going to the NCAA tournament. I'm going to say Kentucky and Tennessee will go for sure. And I'm going to say Alabama, Florida, and LSU would probably be my next tier of teams right here. But as far as my final thought, I'm also going to go a little bit off the beaten path right here, where one of our colleagues has actually moved from Big Ten country down to SEC country. It's created such a fervor.
We may need to pause this section here. Come on. We're not going to go there this show, Sleeko. Maybe later on this season. Rocco, let me turn to you next.
We love.
All right, SEC champion, I'll take Kentucky. I will also I'm close to that 6 bid range. I'll say there's going to be 6. Interestingly, we have a lot to learn still on how teams are actually going to be selected to the tournament. And in this league, man, I can't find a better microcosm. You could end up with teams, let's say there's 6 teams tied for 5th at 10-8, and the non-conference is only, you know, 4 or 5 games when it's all said and done for some of these teams. How are you going to know which teams get in and which ones don't? That's going to be really tough on the committee and for guys like John and I who try to put brackets out there. But I have a feeling that South Carolina is actually going to get into the top 6 in the standings, but somehow not have a good enough resume to get into the tournament. But I'll say Ole Miss takes that 6th spot. And then final thoughts. You know, last year the SEC finished 6th in conferences in KenPom, fell below the Pac-12. And the amount of talent that they have in the league, it has skyrocketed. So it's like the talent's going up. You know, I think they led all conferences last night with 12 NBA draft picks. But the league actually went backwards in terms of caliber of teams. So I think it's just an interesting trend because you see all these amazing recruiters across this conference, Bruce Pearl, Musselman, Oates, you name it, even Tennessee, Kentucky, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Getting
even
big-time
Kentucky
talent.
Can recruit. I mean,
so just – yeah, I think this league – it's representative of, you know, the one and done's not always equating to a success unless you are like Kentucky and you can bring 5 to 7 of them in at a time. Your Anthony Edwards one-off guys and your a couple of the guys that Arkansas or Bama are bringing in, it might not be enough to get you to the tournament. So just really interesting. We'll see how the philosophies start to change. You know, we saw Tom Crean bring in 5 new players that were all upperclassmen. You know, it's very interesting to follow.
I personally am going to agree with the six. I think the six is the number of teams for the SEC. I think Tennessee is going to end up being the best team, but I think it's going to be a three-way battle here. I really think LSU is going to be good enough to be right in there with Kentucky and Tennessee in the battle for the league championship. I might even go LSU if not for the fact that I really don't want to see Will Wade succeed. So it's so tough. But David, let me let you finish off the show here.
Okay, I'm going to go with the six teams, you know, and as far as the overall champion, I'm picking a real dark horse, maybe just to amuse myself, because I am bigger on them than seemingly not just you all, but anybody else I've met. I am going with Florida to win the league. I think the experience they have coming back is going to help them in a season like this. I thought they underperformed last year largely because of their inexperience. Now that they have that experience, I think that they're going to be a lot better than what people are expecting. And I don't know, I can't even put it in the terms. I just have a feeling about them. I like this Gators team.
Okay. Well, I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us for this podcast. If you check out up top there, you can see the rest of our video podcast, the write-ups, everything else that's there. But on behalf of John Stalica and Rocco Miller from Bracketeer.org, David Griggs, John Tytel, I'm Chad Sherwood. Thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.